Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is a chilly Friday. Actually, it's warming up a little bit. Not too bad. But forecast is looking kind of cold. Friday, last day on the second commandment here at Faith and Family. We've had a good discussion all week, and today we're going to the experts. That's right. We're going to the Moms Roundtable. It's been a while since we've had a Moms Roundtable, and looking forward to talking with some of our moms about Second Commandment and kids and issues at home with the Second Commandment and just all things that surround being a mom and families and talking about the Second Commandment. So we're going to get to that here in just a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org, and then go to the sponsor section. Look for that CUW logo in the sponsor section. Click on that. That'll take you to their website. You can find out about the programs they have to offer and where they're located all over the place. Go check it out. KFUO.org and look for the sponsor section. If you'd like to join the conversation today, you can do so. If you have a question pertaining to the topic, the Second Commandment and families and children today, you can give us a call. The number in St. Louis is 314-821-0850. I apologize, our 800 number is still down, so you're welcome to call that St. Louis line. If you're outside of the St. Louis area, that's going to be a long-distance call for you. But if you don't want to call, you can also email if you have a question or a comment for today's topic. You can email us, family@kfuo.org. We'd be glad to get that question into the conversation today, hopefully if we can squeeze it in. Well, we've got our lineup of moms today, and we've got a few to start with. We might even have some more join us throughout the hour. Starting off on the phone today, she's the Minister of the Interior. What a great title. Alyssa Ulmer is joining us from Braidwood, Illinois on the phone. Good morning, Alyssa.
Hi there. Good to be with you.
Good to have you with us today. I love that title, Minister of the Interior.
I think it's pretty accurate. He takes care of the ministering out there, and I take care of ministering the business in here.
Very good title. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. We're going to get to some questions here and hear about your family in just a second. Work around the table here. Also joining us in studio this morning, Laura Campbell, Parish Administrator at Zion Lutheran Church in Peavey, Missouri, just down the road, a hop, skip, and a jump. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
Good to have you in the studio with us. Boy, we get the Zion Peavey folks here every once in a while. We had Pastor Thompson on earlier this week on his time. So it's good that you guys are close enough that we can get you in the studio every once in a while.
It's good to be here.
Well, thanks. And let's see, a parish administrator and used to spend a lot of time with kids, didn't you? What was one of your former vocations?
I used to drive a school bus. I did that for 17 years.
And I bet you never, ever had to deal with any Second Commandment issues on the school bus, huh?
All the time, every day.
Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. And we've got one more seat open. We'll see if our mystery guest gets to join us today as well. So, Alyssa, tell us a little bit about your family. Tell us about the Ulmer family.
Sure. Well, I am the wife of a pastor, and we live in the giant town of Braidwood, Illinois. And I have a daughter who is 3, almost 4/15. Her name is Adeline. And that's pretty much us in a nutshell. We have 2 dogs and just kind of, you know, enjoying the parish life.
Adeline, what a beautiful name.
Well, thank you.
Now, I remember Braidwood as it was one of the exits on my way to Concordia University in Chicago when I would make
the
trip back
That's
and forth.
Right off a lot of people remember it.
I've lived in one of those towns. It's the exit right off of the highway. It's the one between the two cities you're going to, right?
Right. Right. It's one you only stop if you're hungry or out of gas. Yeah.
And Laura, tell us about the Campbell family.
My husband and I have 2 daughters, Lane, who is 22, Claire, who is 18. They're both in college. And we live south of DeSoto.
See, live a little bit further. Peavey is about a half an hour outside of St. Louis. And then outside of DeSoto, that takes you
about 45 minutes.
Okay, so
it's
not too far.
Yeah.
So let's see. We've got one more mystery guest coming in. We'll give her a second to get in the studio here in just a second before we get into our first question. So we've got... We're covering the span. We've got moms, a mom with a 3-year-old and mom with college students. And one more joining us in the studio this morning. We've got one more mystery guest. We didn't reveal who our mystery guest was this morning because I tried to get you out of meetings, huh? That's my job. Joining us in studio, Deaconess Pam Nielsen. She is the Associate Executive Director for Communication Services here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod here in St. Louis. And we probably pulled you out of lunch, didn't we?
No, just editing copy for the next reporter.
A busy person. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. I know that you're a very busy person. And so moms are always busy, right? Always staying busy.
That's right.
So we've got Deaconess Pam Nielsen, Laura Campbell, Parish Administrator at Zion Lutheran Church in Peavely, and on the phone, Alyssa Ulmer, Minister of the Interior is her title.
Ooh, I like that.
All joining us for our Moms Roundtable today. Pam, tell us a little bit about your family.
Sure. I'm a new grandmother.
Yay!
As of 7 months. I've got three children, the youngest of which is 18 and planning her college escape and having a good case of senioritis in her senior year. My son is the new father, and my daughter, Rebecca, lives in Chicago and is a career gal living on the north side. So they keep us busy and excited with the stories of their lives. They've all got very big lives, and it's fun to hear about it.
And that's the exciting part of being a mom, isn't it? Hearing their stories, whether they're a three-year-old talking about whatever happened that day, or a 22-year-old, or you know, even older talking about their day. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got some good stuff lined up today. Talking about the second commandment, we've been talking about that all week, and in preparation, talking with everybody, they're like, well, I don't really remember it being a problem. I don't remember it being having it being a big issue. But I think if we get into the discussion, there might be some things that we don't really think about every day when it comes to the second commandment. So let's review it. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. What does this mean? We should fear and love God so that we do not curse, swear, use satanic arts, lie, or deceive by his name, but call upon it in every trouble, pray, praise, and give thanks. That's the second commandment. Now, if you're coming from another tradition, I guess the second commandment, if you number them differently, we're talking about idols, right, and graven images. But we're talking about using the name of the Lord properly. And so what I want to do is go back in time a little bit, not necessarily about the children, but your story when you were learning the second commandment, or what are your first memories of catechesis and or learning the second commandment? Alyssa? What's your story when it comes to your first memory of catechesis or learning the second commandment?
Well, I know that I learned it when I was young, but I come from a family who was I come from a divorced family, so half of my family was Catholic, non-practicing really, and the other half of my family was Lutheran. So I do remember learning it and not really giving it much thought. Now, as far as the vernacular of my family, like just in conversation, it generally was used, it was misused really a lot. So it wasn't until really I became an adult and even a parent that I started to become a little more understanding and a little more critical about the use of the Lord's name, you know, and why it's important. And it kind of has become a pet peeve, you know, if you're going to use something as an exclamatory, it shouldn't be the Lord's name. You know, you are not of want for other words or phrases that you can use in exclamation form. So it's kind of been more since I've been a parent that I've become, you know, uber sensitive to just hearing the Lord's name taken in a frivolous and even menacing way. You know, it is such a gift. You know, it was given to us for such an important reason, you know, to call on him in times of trouble, and to use it frivolously has become kind of something that irks me a little bit. You know, every time I hear it, I kind of wince. So I know that I was exposed to it when I was younger in my confirmation classes, but like I said, it didn't really sink in until I had a child of my own.
Isn't it interesting when it's something, when it moves outside of ourselves, how things become more important when it's about being a mom and our children, then these things start to become more important teaching or whatever we're doing, everything suddenly becomes important. I'm a new dad and I start to see things a lot differently now with a little one around. Pam, what's your first memory of catechesis or learning the second commandment? What was catechesis like for you?
Well, I think I grew up in a family that we were Lutheran and went to church, and so sort of a lifetime of catechesis. And I can't think of a moment or a time outside of confirmation class really where specifically that was taught. But it was always something that I think that my parents reminded me of, largely by their example. They did not ever use the Lord's name in vain. Maybe once or twice I heard my dad, you know, in a fit of anger, but that was big stuff. And when he did, whoa, because it was so rare. My mother never. And so we grew up where that just wasn't part of the family vocabulary. And I have some vague memories of, because I went to public school most of the time, hearing children do, you know, taking the Lord's name in vain and being shocked by it and just couldn't believe it, because it was just so not part of my vocabulary or my expression of.
And that paints a picture. You know, we live in a world that has very little regard, even more, it seems like increasingly, a world that has very little regard for God's name. And I appreciate that Alyssa pointed out that this is a name that God has given to us. Yes, he's put on us, he's given to us to use appropriately. It's not a name that we gave to God, like Jehovah, which is a man-made name for God, but rather the Lord has given us a name that he, like you said, has put on us to use, to call upon him. So, all good insights. See, this is why we have the Moms Roundtable. Laura, tell us, what was your first memory of catechesis and learning or learning the Second Commandment? I know your story is a different story.
It is. I'm, like Alyssa, a child of divorce, and we didn't attend church much. So after I got married and we had children, we started attending Zion Lutheran Church. And that's where I remember being exposed as an adult, going through adult confirmation. But it also, that wasn't anything that we used in our home either. Even though we weren't in church, we didn't take the name of God in vain. So.
And so about the time that your kids are learning it, this is something you're learning right alongside with them too. And what a good experience to be able to be catechized, to go through catechesis when your kids are as well. What was, for your kids, what was catechesis like? What kind of experience did they have? Or in Alyssa's case, when we get to this, you know, what is catechesis like now, or what will it be? So let's start with Laura again. What was catechesis like for your girls? Was it, you know, some people have start catechesis really young. Some people have just a few years of like specific catechism instruction, maybe in junior high or high school, and some it's just something you do all the time.
Well, we had them involved in Sunday school from little up. Mm-hmm. So at Zion, we do Bible history in fifth and sixth grade, I'm sorry, and then catechesis seventh and eighth grade. So they get 4 years, and probably once or twice I had my girls complain about going. It was not really anything that they dreaded. They learned their memory work, their memory by heart work, and we did it in the car. We, you know, did it all kinds of different places. So I have a better experience with them than some, you know, some begrudgingly go, or I only am going because my mom says I have to. But, you know, it wasn't a big deal in our home because we expected it and they knew it. So it wasn't a fight they were going to win.
It was an expectation. It was important.
Exactly.
Very good. And I'm going to guess that there's a chance that they saw an example there as well, because you were, you know, they probably saw that you were being instructed to some degree as well.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Pam?
Yeah, I think similar thing. Our children did get to go to a Lutheran school for many years, Sunday school. So they were in a constant kind of atmosphere that reminded them of that as we reviewed Bible lessons at home. We've been blessed to have both sets of grandparents nearby as the children grew up, and they reinforced that. And I think being in the environment with other children who had the same value, that this was not something that you did. I know one thing that struck me as a child and is the difference between this commandment, taking the Lord's name in vain, and vulgar talk. And, you know, in society, vulgar talk is almost worse than taking the Lord's name in vain. And making that distinction for my children you know, which is really, one is offensive, the other is against God's commands. You
sure.
Know?
Right. Well, and I think that could even, vulgar talk can be included in this. Mm-hmm. We do not curse, swear, use satanic arts, lie, or deceive by his name, but call upon it in every trouble. Mm-hmm. Well, let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Right. You know? But some expressions that people sure. use just are, they're just plain vulgar. They're not really swearing. They're just, you know, and
cursing.
They're tasteless.
Still, yeah.
They're tasteless. Yeah. It's a little different than taking the Lord's name, quite a bit different than taking the Lord's name. But it's just interesting to me how society views that. And, you know, I've discussed that with my children as well. And of course, there's that whole, a couple years ago, OMG, which I think people still use. There was a
yeah.
song.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember asking my kids, what is that? And they told me. And then I start seeing, you know, them using that. Everybody's using that in their text messages. And I am just bumped by that because I know what it stands for. But I notice that with my kids, like, oh, Mom, it's just a text. You know, it's not, they're not thinking, oh, my God. They're mm-hmm. thinking, OMG, everybody uses it. You know, it's like moved off of their radar, which is very interesting mm-hmm. and troubling.
What an important insight that, you know, something as simple as OMG, we don't realize that it actually has meaning behind it. Everything we say, words or abbreviations, you know, text ease, I don't know, what's our IMEs, that's what it's called. You know, these little shortened words yeah. that we use have meaning behind them. Words have meaning. And that, while it seems harmless, really does. It's misusing God's name.
Yeah. And you can say, well, I meant, oh, my goodness. Okay. But the person who
the
sees OMG,
end.
It's tied to that song and the cultural phenomenon of, mm-hmm. of right. OMG. And that's very clear what mm-hmm. that is.
Sure. Very good. Now, Alyssa, is Edeline texting these days?
You know, I try to keep it at a minimum. I tell her, you know, no texting until after dinner. No. No, she's not texting. Actually, it's funny because I don't text because I was born like 3 years before. I don't know. I feel like you have to be born after 1980 to really have it all just be a part of your being. And I'm just a hair early. And so I can't do it. So I don't text. But every once in a while, she'll have her play phone. And she's like, I'm texting my friend. I'm like, who are you? Who does that? Okay. Apparently, this is a cultural gap that I cannot bridge. It's just what it is. But yeah, along with the OMG thing, I find it interesting because isn't that exactly what the devil wants? Doesn't he want us to trivialize God? And doesn't he act in the most insidious way? You know, like he wants it to be no big deal. He wants our children and he wants our culture to shrug and be like, it's just a text. It's just OMG. You know, that's how he operates. You know, it's that, mm-hmm. you know, get a little finger in, make God's name trivial, and soon everything else about God becomes trivial. You know, mm-hmm. that's just how he works.
Mm-hmm. And that's so true when it comes to TV and movies. I think about as a kid, hardly ever hearing, you know, God's name misused on TV. And I didn't grow up, you know, in the church necessarily. It wasn't later on until I was in high school that I started attending church regularly. So I wasn't catechized as a kid. But, I don't remember hearing on TV back in the 80s God's name misused as much as I do today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
it's more than the vulgar talk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you hear that and it just, it ruins a movie for me, the constant mm-hmm. barrage of using the name of Christ or God in ways that are wrong.
that aren't fitting for,
right.
Now, you know, it's tough because we know that the world around us doesn't understand this, doesn't understand the commandment. And, you know, if they don't have Christ, they don't know Christ. They don't understand this commandment that God has given us. But to sit and listen to it, as you said, this just going on and on and on, how difficult that is, to the point that it just, for me, makes me want to just turn off the TV or turn off the movie or whatever, or change the station.
But the world has learned very quickly that you don't use the name of Allah in a lighthearted way, because you never hear that. And that would be great offense to that religion, the Islamic faith. But no trouble taking the name of God to mm-hmm. the Christians and using mm-hmm. it in every filthy, awful way that they can. So it's a little bit of a double standard, I think. But
well, and I think, as Alyssa pointed out, it's just this slippery slope. It's what mm-hmm. the devil wants to use to a little bit here, a little bit there, exactly. so that the name of God no longer has real meaning, no significant meaning. Alyssa, what's catechesis like for Adeline?
Well, I am blessed with a husband who takes his vocation very seriously as father, and he does a great job. He has started, he started when she was real little, before she was even talking, and we always prayed together, and he's especially diligent every night, making sure that she recites the Lord's Prayer, the Apostles' Creed. He goes through the Ten Commandments, and we'll say the Luther's Evening Prayer and have a scriptural reading. So he's really doing a good job of setting up a foundation that we can build on. And part of that also is we also use a resource called Sing the Faith. It's a CD, mm-hmm. and I can't recommend it highly enough to mothers with young children, because it's the catechism set to, with children singing it. So set to music, and you can pop it in the van, you can pop it in the house as background music, and before you know it, your children know the Ten Commandments, and there's more than just the Ten Commandments on there, but it's just really good at putting that in their brains, and before you know it, like now, she's almost four, and she knows the Ten Commandments, and I also use it as a CD. I am the director of our children's choir, and so we use it as the warm-up for our choir time. And it's amazing how quickly children latch onto something that's set to music. And so, they're learning the Ten Commandments very quickly also through that resource.
What a great resource. Pam is rejoicing. She likes that resource too.
I helped develop that resource when I was at CPH. That just makes my heart glad. That was exactly the purpose that we intended for it. It wasn't meant to be choral music for church. It was meant to teach children the faith through music.
Good. That's exactly how we're using it, and it almost every day. It was a gift to us from her sponsors, from Adeline's sponsors, when she was very little. And we used to listen to it even when she was just crawling around, and now it's just become part of, our family soundtrack. So
terrific.
Awesome.
Family soundtrack. That sounds like a fun show, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We could discuss what your family soundtrack is. Well, that's that's great to hear. I have a 3-month-old, and just starting, I realized I teach the Sunday school kids to sign the Lord's Prayer, and my 3-month-old, we've been trying to use some signs with him. We know that it's still a little ways down the road before he'll start signing and communicating in those ways other than screams, but I realized I should be signing the Lord's Prayer with him as well when teach Erwin praying the Lord's Prayer. So I started doing that about a week or two ago, thinking, oh, I should be signing this with him so he could learn it too down the road. What a great way. Music, signs, all these things are great resources when they're really little. And which reminds me, coming up next week, we're going to talk with Pastor Peter Bender about lifespan catechesis from the womb to life's end catechesis. So that's going to be a good conversation coming up next week here on Faith and Family. What are some examples, whether good or bad, along the way that helped you teach your children about the commandments? And if you have some about the second commandment, good examples, bad examples. We already mentioned TV and OMG. Any other examples along the way? You mentioned family members as well. What to do, what not to do. Were there any examples that helped you teach that were teachable moments? Everybody's thinking.
I have one.
Sure.
Because it is Christmas time. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole to Santa or not to Santa, but I am going to talk about, we were at Hobby Lobby, perusing the aisles for hours like I'm wont to do. And we come across a whole section devoted to Jesus and Santa. Now, my 3-year-old just stood there staring agag at this display because it's Santa in all sorts of strange situations with the baby Jesus.
Oh,
Santa
my.
Santa cradling the baby Jesus. Santa in the manger, with his hand on Mary's shoulder. Santa looking over baby Jesus, laying in the hay. Santa, it's such a strange confusion of terms. So we're just standing there staring at it. And she looks at me with her face kind of wrinkled up, and she says, "Do you like these, Mom?" And I said, "No, you know, I don't really care for them. Who does it look like Santa is in this picture?" And she says, "Is it Jesus's daddy or grandpa, or, you know?" And she kept trying to make sense of the strangeness that she was looking at. I was like, "No, that's kind of why I don't care for it, because God is Jesus's father, you know." So I also think that teaching the second commandment is being explicitly clear on who God is, and taking every opportunity to express that. So I want it to be explicitly clear. No, Jesus and Santa weren't in the manger together. You know, Saint Nicholas came much later. Mary and Joseph were his earthly parents. You know, God is the Father. You know, taking this time to really confess the faith clearly. Mm-hmm. There is so much confusion about who God is, and I feel like our children will have more than really, I think, any other time in history, exposure to so many different views on who God is. You know, whether it's the internet, social media, television, your cell phone, radio, you know, there's just so much exposure to different thoughts and ideas. And if you cannot, when you see a thought or an idea about who God is, if you cannot take that time to say, wait, that is not true, this is how I know it's not true, and if they don't have the weapons of clear confession, you know, and really a concise view of who we know that God is, then it would be very difficult for them to make their way in this very confusing world.
Very, very true. Having a clear picture, a clear confession of who God is, and that's what this commandment, as you pointed out so very well, this commandment does. We need to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll continue our discussion at the Mom's Round Table. I was almost singing Silent Night there, wasn't I? The Mom's Round Table here on Faith and Family. Stick around. We've got more great conversation coming up.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Recently, the state of California quietly became the abortion capital of America. The pro-abortion controlled legislature and pro-abortion governor passed a bill. Secretly tucked away inside was a part that next year repeals any restriction on abortion throughout pregnancy. This means no informed consent for women having an abortion, no safety guidelines at abortion mills, or no parental consent. While most states are safeguarding women from the likes of Kermit Gosnell, who ran a horrific abortion mill in Philly, California politicians are flinging open the doors for the abortion industry to maim and kill even more. For example, an abortionist who isn't even a doctor could do an abortion on your 12-year-old without your knowledge. Back Alley Abortion is returning.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service has been there for me since I began the American leg of my journey as a refugee. Their staff helped me and my family to a local church in the community where I resettled, a church whose hospitality could not have been more important in my transition to a welcoming American society. Learn more about Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service and journeys like mine, LIRS.org.
Whether you're a regular worshiper at the church of your choice or find it difficult to get to church on Sunday morning, you may benefit from our live worship broadcasts each week on Worldwide KFUO. Our early service begins at 8:15 Central and originates from Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville, where Reverend John Shank serves as pastor. Our live late worship broadcast at 10:45 comes from Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, where Pastor Kevin Golden leads the service. Sunday mornings on Worldwide KFUO.
Start your day right with the Word of God in prayer. We'll talk with special guests.
We'll study the Bible and hear a brief sermon from our guest pastor. Join me, Andy Bates.
And Craig D'Onofrio, weekday mornings 7 to 9:30 Central for his time on Worldwide KFUO.
The messenger of good news.
Weekday mornings beginning at 7 a.m. on KFUO.
Members of the Newtown, Connecticut community, including the parent of a teacher who was killed in the school massacre 1 year ago, have held a service at Washington National Cathedral. Jill Russo said,
"We are here today with the common goal of remembering our loved ones and seeking to make our world a safer place."
The Reverend Mel Kawakami of Newtown United Methodist Church said,
"In the face of these broken hearts, we hear these words from Christian scripture: blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted."
The Reverend Gary Hall, Dean of Washington National Cathedral, said the fight for gun control isn't over.
"We in the faith community renew our commitment and our pledge to make American classrooms, American workplaces, and American streets safe for our children, for our families, and for our friends."
I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. It is Friday, December 13th, and it is a Mom's Roundtable today. I got that right. I almost messed it up earlier. Mom's Roundtable today. We're talking about the Second Commandment and families, kids, all great topics today. Good stories, good conversation so far, and we've got a good guest on the roundtable today. We're going to go to the phones. We've got a call from Indianapolis. We've got Cheryl. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. I am a mom and I am a grandma. My grandson is 1 year old. I want to know, I have a couple of questions. Have any of you ever tried using My First Catechism, the Illustrated Catechism? I recently got a copy of that and I really like the illustrations in it. And then my other question is, have any of you ever tried teaching the name of God that's given in Isaiah 9, verse 6? Where Christ is spoken of as the Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace?
Good questions. All right. Thanks, Cheryl. Very good. Anybody used My First Catechism?
We actually have. That is another gift that Adeline had gotten from her sponsors. And so we used that a lot when she was littler, because she could really relate to the pictures. She really enjoys the pictures. So now we kind of use it as a supplement. She will look at it while my husband works out of the regular catechism. So he'll be reading out of that, and she'll be following along in her version. And we do kind of the same thing with the children's Bible that you can get through CPH. Again, it has great pictures. So at night when we do nightly devotions, my husband will be reading from the family Bible, and she will be following along because occasionally there will be a picture or something that will really depict clearly what we're talking about. So we have used it. We do enjoy it.
I like the pictures in it. We talked with Cheryl a couple of days ago about the pictures in it as well. I like the images in it. They do a nice job of bringing those stories for that really little child as well.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah.
Pam's nodding her head yes, for those of you who are listening and can't hear the nodding.
Sorry. Forgot I'm on radio. We're just having a conversation here in this little room, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then the other question, Isaiah 9:6. I'm going to pull that up and make sure that I'm reading the text correctly. So let's see, because I'm not as good as everybody else.
We hear that a lot this time of year in the Christmas carols. Wonderful Counselor.
Right, right.
Prince of Peace, Mighty God, you know,
right.
Those... a refrain of.
I have a shirt with all of that on it.
Yeah.
I think both of my kids have shirts.
Yeah, you see it on Christmas cards. And
yeah, yeah. Except for I was looking in the wrong translation. I was trying to look it up in the Greek. Obviously, Isaiah is not in Greek.
Well, in the Septuagint, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. To get to her question, I didn't specifically
try to teach that beyond what Sunday school materials or what they were learning in day school, going over those names. It's a great approach because they all kind of slice God in a different way or give you a different facet of who God is for you, which would make a nice ongoing, you know, a different name each day. And, you know, and then you have, all the places in the New Testament where Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, I am the door,
I am.
You know, all the I ams. Yeah. So, yeah.
The name I am is a name that he has given to himself.
That's
and
right.
I think that's an interesting point to bring up. I mentioned it earlier when discussing the second commandment with children or with anybody. These are names that God has given to himself, not names that we give to God. This was an interesting thing that I learned from my Old Testament professor way back when. I had Dr. Nathan Jastrom, amazing guy, amazing professor. And it pointed out that he pointed out that the name Jehovah actually is a man-made name for God. It's not a name that God gave to himself because of this commandment. The Israelites, the Jews, did not want to misuse the name of the Lord their God. So in order to avoid misusing God's name, they didn't use the name that God gave himself. Rather, they made up a name. So they take the vowels from one name and the consonants from another name, essentially. They take Yahweh and Adonai. They take the consonants, I guess, from Yahweh and the vowels from Adonai, and you get Jehovah.
That's interesting.
So as not to misuse the name of the Lord.
I guess that's one approach.
So just give God a different name so you don't misuse his name, right?
Like the man upstairs.
Right.
The big guy. You know, you hear people still do that.
Sure.
They come up with kitschy little names for God, which to me seem always pretty empty. And
one other topic that I'd like to get to today, In the second commandment that comes up in the response, you know, we should fear and love God so that we do not curse, swear, use satanic arts, lie or deceive by his name. How have any of you had to deal with the topic of the issue of satanic arts when it comes to your children? Ever had to deal with that? I know in my generation, it was the Ouija board and having to deal with that and crazy stories with that. So creepy stuff.
Kind of an interesting, there are some parents who have a real hard time with some of the fads of the last 10 years, the Harry Potters, the Lord of the Rings, the, you know, you can pick whatever, any of them that use some sort of sorcery or magic or whatever. There's a lot of parents who feel, okay, we can't have any exposure to this because it's a muddying of the waters. While I understand that, we are more of the approach of some things are real and some things are not. You know, if you try to avoid everything in this world that isn't true or isn't real, you will be Amish. I mean, that is literally your only option. You'll just walk around with your hands over your ears saying la 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 la. So we just really stress what is real and what is not. Mm-hmm. Like that's our big focus right now with a 3 almost 4-year-old. What is real, what is not. Some things are pretend. And it's okay to read about them, you know, watch them in movies, but they are not real. They are not true. We know the things that are real. God gives us the things that are real, and he says, these things are real. So that is, we have guidelines that we can use, and that's the approach that we take just because we feel like she will be bombarded with lots of different, you know, from as trivial as Harry Potter to as scary as Wiccan, and we can say, no, that is not true. That is not good. That is not right. You know, and we can be very clear about what is then. You know, we really want the truth to be her compass, you know, her confessions to be her compass. If it fits in with those confessions, you know what it is. If it doesn't, you know what it is. So that's kind of our approach.
That's very clear. Yeah.
And I would say that both my girls read Twilight, the whole series. I read them. We went to the movies together. They know what's real and what's not real. You know?
Yeah.
There wasn't, oh, I want to marry a vampire. So, maybe, you know, but they know who God is from being catechized and raised in the church. So I was confident that that wasn't going to feed into anything else.
Well, and I think the key here is that you were reading it right along with them.
I
you
was.
Were seeing the movies with them and you were having conversations about them.
Oh, yeah, because we disagreed on the characters sometimes. So it was quite conversational.
So you had good conversations about it.
But at the same time, you know, where is it in Scripture? My name is Legion, for we are many. Satan is very real. He's defeated. But he still prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And he does have evil spirits. And, you know, I've tried to help my children understand that a lot of this is nonsense. But that there is Satan. There is an evil foe. When Luther teaches us to pray, that thy holy angel be with me, that the wicked foe may have no power over me, that's... That part of that prayer I've excerpted so many times with my children in various circumstances in our life, because there are spiritual forces at war. We're the church militant. We have the final victory. But, you know, when you talk to missionaries, particularly out on the edges of the church, they will tell you how very real Satan and his spirits are, where demon possession is a common thing. And so, you know, when you watch some of these TV shows where they're reality, or, you know, a crime show that isn't a joke, they're like dealing with evil stuff, and they make it so sort of seductively beautiful. And the sort of evil lifestyle, those lines get kind of blurry, I think, in our culture. And I think it's good to, with children, talk about that as well. Not just, oh, it's all fake. There is a real and present danger and evil in this world. But greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. So...
Well, I think what you've all pointed out very clearly here is, who is teaching your children? Is it you or the world? And it's okay to be exposed to what is going on in the world around you. It's important to understand what's going on around us in the world. But as you pointed out, Pam, that what the world teaches us quite often blurs those lines, and that there's not, the truth isn't there, or very rarely is it there. What brings the truth is the Word of God in conversations that you have with your children, the interaction, every teachable moment that you have with your children. That's where the truth is being brought into their lives. As when you teach that word, when you speak that word every day, it's not just on Sunday, but it's every day having those conversations, and every simple little thing, reading a book together, watching watching a movie together. Those are all important things.
Family dinner hour where you talk about things, you know, so important.
Just to connect at the same time every day. And when you're going from here, there, and everywhere, sometimes you're in the car connecting, you know, but you still have to make that effort and time to connect with your kids.
Very much so.
Because you have to battle what the world is throwing at them. And there's so much being thrown at our kids.
And now, Pam and Laura, you're at the point where the kids are out of the house. And, you know, a different stage in life. How do you make those connections now? You know, Alyssa, you're blessed in that your child is home, and you can, you have those conversations all the time. You, as a matter of fact, you're stuck having those conversations all the time, right?
That's true. Over and over and over again.
You might want to learn to text. I'm telling you. I want to connect with my kids, it's Facebook and texting. They don't call. They don't want me calling them. Their phone, their ringers are never on. I can never reach them by a phone call. But I can text them, and poof, I've got a response. You know, that's just the way of life.
It's a very convenient form of communication.
Yeah,
because you can, by calling them, you might be interrupting something out loud, but if you text, then you're not necessarily interrupting out loud. They might be in class.
In some ways, like my daughter who's working, I would never call her. She would never call me during the workday, but we text each other off and on through the day, and I feel like I'm probably connected more with her.
Unless she's calling right now. No, wait.
I don't think so.
Well, and for me, it's different for both of my girls. Our oldest calls me. She might call me five times today just to check in. We do text, but she likes to call. Our youngest, she'll text me, or she might just call me once a week. And that's, you know, that's okay.
That's right.
She's got things going.
Yeah.
That's right. They have their own kind of rhythm. And
right.
Well, the other topic I want to get to, the other question, we've talked a lot about what not to do, you know, what the commandment teaches us not to do. But the commandment also teaches us what to do, and that is how to call upon God, how to use his name appropriately, and that is to call upon him in prayer, praise, and thanksgiving. And so I'd like to talk about some of those stories from the early years, how you go about teaching your children or taught your children to pray, and maybe some of the stories from that. Alyssa, how are you going about teaching Adeline to pray?
Well, we have kind of an interesting situation happening right now. We just had a tornado come through here.
Just now?
Within
the last few months.
Within the last month.
She's so calm. Right.
Coal City is the town right next to us.
Oh, okay.
And so it was just hit hard by the tornado. We had parishioners whose houses were hit. And it was we were at church when the tornado came through, and we were having a potluck. We said, you know, where better to be than at church in a potluck? We've had communion. We heard a great sermon, and we've had a potluck. Either way this goes, we are set.
You're well fed both ways.
Exactly. So it was scary. The church family, we all huddled into restrooms and supply closets, and, you know, people came running in off of the street seeking shelter, who were being chased by the tornado down the highway. It was a very scary time. And then our focus became, you know, cleanup and helping the people who had been so devastated by this disaster. Well, this has been an ever-present issue, and you know how three-year-olds are. They get something in their head, and it's like it's on repeat. Mm-hmm. So she's very concerned about this tornado, and every time she sees anything that's fallen, you know, a chair falling over in the backyard, did the tornado do that? You know, everything is just, it's very present in her mind. And we also have a preschool that's attached to our school. And so we had some preschoolers who were affected by it. And so the following week, I sat in on the preschool chapel, and my husband spent a lot of time concentrating on calming their fears. And he talked about, you know, when Jesus stopped the storm and calmed the seas, and really talked to them a lot about who is God and what does he do for you, and talking about God as their father. And what does a father do? And the preschoolers, you know, raised their hands and said, you know, your father takes care of you. They give you things. They protect you. And so it was really helpful because he really focused on you are never alone. And in the part of you in your deepest despair and feeling so scared, he is with you. And so that was really a great way to help them get through that. And Adeline and I still talk about that, you know, as we're driving and we see, you know, something turned over and upended, you know, and she'll say, did the tornado do that? Yes, but he is protecting us. God is protecting us. God is with us. We are not alone. We do not have to fear. So it's really been a good way to kind of keep God and his ever-present and his ever-protecting nature, you know, right there for her and for us too. You know, it was a great reminder that God kept us through this. He protected us. You know, no one was hurt up here. Thank the Lord. And God protected us. And then he drew us all together to serve each other and to serve our neighbors. So it was a great teaching opportunity, I think, for all of us amidst the devastation.
Very much so. And what a great opportunity to teach about who God is. That I like the example that you used and that Luther uses too, that, you know, he is our father, and you can go to your father and ask for whatever you need.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. What a great example.
Well, and I would add, as important as it is when they're little to teach them to pray, you know, in their teenage and young adult years, it's just as important to remind them to pray. Mm-hmm. You know, they're having trouble with a test or somebody at work, you know, just pray about it. Just say a little prayer and it's all going to work out. So that has been my, over the last year, trying to remind them, you know, just say a little prayer. You're all worked up. Just calm down and just, you know, let it go.
It may not work out the way that you want it to, but it's still going to work out.
Right. Exactly. He's going to work it out. So
yeah, it's really true. You know, I think in terms of teaching it, and we've all talked about it in out of our own families, but it's that really a lifetime of modeling prayer, mm-hmm. being in church, being in Sunday school, where the family dinner table, where you say the table prayer every night, the bedtime prayers, where children see that this is a part of the life of faith. Mm-hmm. And then the times when there are challenges, a tornado, sickness, someone dies, the dog is ill, all the things of life that bring us to our knees, that we take the time to fold our hands to pray out loud with our children, mm-hmm. And for them to see their parents in prayer, and to join in the prayers of the church. You know, the hymnal for us was, you know, it's filled with prayers that you can sing.
Right.
And there's also just prayers in there. And of course, the Luther morning and evening prayers, those were from the beginning in our home with the kids. We just say them there. They're just rich, full prayers. Mm-hmm. They cover a lot of territory, like the Lord's Prayer is the ultimate, of course. And that, too, just is should be part of the culture of the family and of the raising of your children, so that they have a deep well of prayer to draw from when mm-hmm. the devil assaults them in their life.
And that's, Laura, Pastor Thompson was here, what, just a week ago, I think, talking about their family prayer, their family devotions, right. and praying the catechism daily. And we got to hear from the kids, all three of them, and their kids are all college age and adults mm-hmm. and out in, you know, the oldest is out in her career, full-time career now. And so she joined us, Marie joined us by phone. And when Pastor asked questions, she answered very candidly about what her thoughts about their family prayers and their times that they had a time, set time every morning that they got together for family prayer, and they would pray the catechism, they would pray the Ten Commandments, the Creed, and the Lord's Prayer. And then also ex corde, they'd pray whatever mm-hmm. you know they were concerned about that day, and that's how the parents knew what was going on with the kids. But the parents were also modeling for the kids. You know, the kids would hear the parents' prayers and the things that were important to them as well, and the things that they were concerned about. So there was a lot of good things that came out of that. They're learning how to pray. They're learning what's going on in each other's lives, and most importantly, they're coming before their Father in heaven, just as He has given them to do, just as He's given them the opportunity to pray, and He's hearing their prayers. And just hearing Marie say, you know, at times it was really annoying to have to do that every morning, and the dad was like, you know, we couldn't be late. We had to be on time for that. And even if we were late for school, we always prayed every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's great.
It comes back to what you were saying, Pam, that it's just what you do. It's a part of your daily routine. Mm-hmm. It's part of what you do. Not that you make it something that's rote, that you don't pay attention to it when you do it, but rather it's so familiar that when those difficult times come up, such as a tornado or something like that, that's the familiar thing that you go back to is your Father in heaven.
Yeah. Right.
So that you can pray that. So this has been such a great conversation. We are we're out of time. Isn't it amazing how an hour goes by so quickly? Well, we have had some great guests today. Alyssa Ulmer, Minister of the Interior in Braidwood, Illinois. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Alyssa.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you on the phone with us this morning. Laura Campbell, Parish Administrator at Zion Lutheran Church in Peavely, Missouri. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Deaconess Pam Nielsen, Associate Executive Director for Communication Services and Communications here at Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Thanks for joining us.
It's great. Thank you.
It's been a good conversation. Another successful mom's roundtable today. Coming up next week, we're going to jump into the third commandment, which should be a good conversation. We've got some great people lined up. Pastor Peter Bender and other folks lined up next week to talk about the third commandment and families, including some movie reviews of Christmas, favorite Christmas movies, all good stuff. So Moments of Assurance up next right here on Listener Supported Worldwide KFUO. Stick around.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.